Hello, Career Cohort. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Emily Wong, founder of Words of Distinction. We talk about tools for achieving career success, inspirational stories about overcoming career and life challenges, and how we can recalibrate our perspective to better enjoy the journey forward. Hello, you're not going to want to miss this episode. I have Tammy Guler-Loeb here with me. She's the author of Work from the Inside Out. She's a career and executive coach, speaker, and facilitator with expertise in career transitions and leadership development. She has a weekly podcast also called Work from the Inside Out. And I have to say, Tammy, that it's one of the podcasts that keeps my dog Clover and me company when we go for our daily walk.
That's nice. What does Clover have to say about it?
She says, woof, woof. She's just really excited. She's very excited to go for a walk. And the reason I can do walks, I used to be a runner and I have to walk now. The reason I can do that is because I multitask. I take Clover for a walk and I listen to a podcast. And you're one of those nice. On my list. So,
Thank you.
So thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I just wanted to start, Tammy, by asking how your career led you to the work you're doing today.
So I love that question because that's what I love to ask other people too. And so I have always been fascinated by what people choose to do for work, and not so much that I'm sizing up, you know, their actual career choices, but I've always been fascinated by people who love what they do and listening to them talk about their work. I think because growing up, both of my parents did work that they really enjoyed, and we spent a lot of time at the dinner table. We did have family dinners. They talked about their work, and they talked about it with a lot of warmth and affection for the people that they worked with. My dad was a school psychologist. My mother was a social worker. And it was, I was fascinated by what they did, and I always loved hearing other people talk about their work, and especially when they enjoyed it. So off to college I went many years later, and I ended up getting a work study job in the Career Center in college, and I enjoyed that as well. I ended up actually going into the mental health field initially out of school, but many iterations of different human service and higher ed, and I even went into the political arena for a while, public policy, but I ended up finding my way back to the field of coaching, although back to, it was a new field at the time, but it was straight into the arms of the career and executive arena, starting out mostly with careers and job search, helping people to find work that they could really feel good about, perhaps love, but just feel really good about. And then that led to a whole lot of other types of things that I have added on over the years. I've been doing this over 20 years, so I've had lots of time to expand it and to throw in new ingredients and create new recipes.
That's really great that you can harken back to your dinner table. And it's another plug for dinner table conversations, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, actually, just to make a quick note around that, I feel very fortunate that I was introduced to the world of work and careers as a kid in the way of not any big pressure put on me, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I mean, I think that probably that conversation came up, but it was more like, you know, what kind of mark do you want to make on the world? Or, and again, no pressure, just, you know, who do you want to be down the road? And my parents really gave us great examples because they enjoyed what they did. And I always, when I talk to my clients or other people, I talk to them about those kinds of things. And, you know, especially when I see a lot of people who aren't happy at work, and I'm curious if they have young children and are they really, what kind of model are they giving their kids for what it means to go to work every day or to have a job or have a profession or a career? Because I think that that really is formative.
Oh, absolutely. I feel a little guilty because both my sons are engineers, or one's graduating and he's wanted to be an engineer since he was two. He really loves being an engineer. He's graduating and he's doing internships, but he really loves that. And I know that's kind of that stereotypical, either the accountant or the engineer. And my other son's an engineer too. So one's mechanical, one's civil. And the one who is it, he's a freshman in college. And I've told him several times, you do not have to be a civil engineer, but he really enjoys it. But he also enjoys anything to do with film, absolutely anything. And I said, you do not have to be, I've said this several times. And I said, you know what, if you want to take courses, and he actually decided, he's at UT Austin where they have a really good program. Mm-hmm. And he's going to take a couple of classes because he critiques movies like nobody. And I said, and of course I was trying to put the two together. If you really love civil engineering and you really like film, maybe you could do set design. I was making a stretch. But the thing is that I understand what you're saying. And it's all a big experiment. So, and one of the things that I wanted to say too is, you were talking, I don't think you used these words just a few minutes ago, but it's basically one of the lines in your book. It's not what kind of success you should have, but what value you're bringing. And that sounds like something you got from your dinner table with your parents, right?
Yeah. I think there's a chapter in the book that success is not a destination. And I think that sometimes when people are building a career or moving in a certain direction, they think they have to tolerate a lot of stepping stones along the way, because they're going to reach some pinnacle of success, rather than seeing all the things along the way that might be meaningful to them that can also be considered successes. And, you know, it's not just those quantitative things that constitute success, or how much money you make, or I mean everyone has their own definition of success, right? But it's not just a singular thing. At least that's what I'm trying to convey in the book, is how do you define it for yourself? And if you define it inside a box, and keep that box closed, you could end up disappointing yourself because you've kind of given it this definition. And if you don't meet those criteria, you know, it can really do a number on your self-esteem, and it can really impact how you carry yourself through life.
Right. And you, the name of your book and the name of your podcast is both Work From the Inside Out. And that seems very fitting.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I initially had a title for the book that was different because I didn't want them both to be the same. But the further along I got and ran it by all kinds of different people, the more it just made sense to have them be by the same name.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I think it's really obvious what you want to do and what's important to you, Tammy. And I think, you know, it seems to me, I mean, you can elaborate on this, but it seems like you really wanted to get the word out, and that's why you wrote this book, right? You're really trying to help people experience basically what you experienced, right?
Yeah. Well, some of what I experienced, there's some things I've experienced that I wouldn't wish on anybody else.
Right. No, I get that. Know, yeah.
You know, like, you know, having a bully boss, or, you know, I mean, I certainly had plenty of bad experiences, which in different workplaces. And that actually just spurred me on to become a career coach because I wanted to help more people, you know, move forward into, you know, different jobs or roles or careers where they could find more fulfillment and meaning and satisfaction. And I felt that writing a book would be a great way to reach more people rather than sticking solely with coaching, you know, individuals all the time or working with small groups. So it seemed to be a great way to get that message out. Yeah.
Right. And then your subtitle is longer. It's break through the 9 common obstacles and design a career that fulfills you. And then I love the way that each obstacle is covered in kind of a self-contained section. So I can pick up anywhere and read, right? And specifically about what's bothering me. And I noticed you start with fear. And specifically fear of the unknown. And I was wondering if you started with that because that's the most common block you come across.
Well, yes, and fear kind of runs through almost the whole book because it can play itself out in a lot of different ways. So the first chapter, fear, friend or foe, I try to give it a frame, a face, so to speak, because fear can play itself out. So when we're thinking about making a change in our lives or make a transition of some type, usually there's something that brings up the feeling of fear. Now, sometimes that feeling can be, you know, that fight or flight response, that protective part of our brain that says, you know, hold on, you know, maybe run in the other direction. But then there's that other part of us that might feel fear, which is actually more like a feeling of excitement. And it might be, oh, I don't, you know, like the unknown, I'm not sure about this, but there's something kind of intriguing, kind of exciting about this, but I don't know enough about it. And so should I try? I don't know. It's kind of scary to try something new or try something I'm not familiar with. And some people are more open to that than others. So that's why I call it a friend or a foe. You have to check in with yourself and decide how you want to treat that. I tend to encourage people to treat it as a friend, of course, in this particular case. But then there are a number of different scenarios where the fear will show up as, oh, you know, I've got a family to take care of. I couldn't possibly change my career or my job right now. I've got bills to pay or kids to put through school or all these other things. I'm afraid that I'll deprive them of something or I won't be able to afford certain things. And so the fear kind of scares people into, you know, that they're going to become, you know, financially unstable or, you know, I've seen a lot of people who are afraid, oh, I'm 45, I'm 50 years old, I'm in my 50s. It's too late. I couldn't possibly change, you know, careers or jobs right now. I've invested all this time into this career already. Why would I waste all that I already put in this? Even if I am miserable, I've only got so many years till I retire. I'll just ride it out. Or I don't want to have to start all over again. So there's what that sort of shows, and I hear this all the time, but that's where fear is talking. Fear is saying, well, it's either all or nothing. Like it must be that if I make a choice to make a change, that means I'm going to put my family in jeopardy in some way, or that means that I'm going to have to start all over again, which is not necessarily true at all. There's lots of ways that, and I tell stories throughout the whole book of real life examples of people who have made these changes under those circumstances, and they have been able to change their careers and their lives in ways without, you know, taking all the chances that people who fall into that all or nothing sort of fearful thinking fall into. But yet, I'm not criticizing people who fall into that. That's very human. But I think it's important to point it out so that people can catch themselves and give themselves the opportunity to maybe do some exploration, do some planning, and think about it. Because most of the stories in the book really demonstrate that most of these folks who did make these changes didn't make them overnight. It took time, and they did it incrementally.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I notice about your career heroes. I call them heroes because they're doing these amazing things. And I notice that obviously their career transitions are iterative, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And so when they make the transition, it may not necessarily be the perfect fit, mm-hmm. but they know that they're taking one more step to where they want to be and that ideal job.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it seems very intentional. These stories seem very intentional to me. There's the intentionality, there's the curiosity. And also I'm noticing they really tap into their network.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point. And I also want to draw out something else you just said, the curiosity piece. I think curiosity is key. That I would say that almost everybody that I profile in the book definitely tapped into their curiosity, and that helped them to move through those steps. And it takes time to be curious. But yes, tapping into their networks, talking to people. And it's not about talking to people to ask for a new job. It's just trying to get more information, trying to understand what are the things you need to learn in order to make, you know, forward-thinking decisions about the things you're interested in. So it's, I think too often people think you're going to try to go from A to Z, and you're forgetting about the fact that there's another 25 letters in the middle there, you know, all those different steps that you can take to get to where you want to go. And sometimes in the process, you may even change your mind. There may be some other ways for you to get to where you want to go. Or you might realize, oh, you know, I thought this is what I wanted. And now I'm realizing, oh, there's some other ways to look at this. Well, let me get curious about that. And give yourself some time to think about some things in new and different ways. And just the process of doing that has tremendous value. And so especially if you're in a situation with your work where you're really not feeling fulfilled, this is a great way to kind of help you survive that for a while until you really can perhaps make that pivot, or maybe even just add, you know, a side gig, something else that does fulfill you. It doesn't have to be, again, all or nothing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And in my own experience, I had to try a couple of different things to get where I am now. And
yeah.
I totally agree with that. I don't know anybody who's, as you said, gone from A to Z in just that.
Yeah, there's really no such thing. I mean, I think about, you know, one of the people I profile in the book, Dori Clark, she always says, you know, I was an overnight sensation 10 years in the making.
I love it.
And you know, but if you look at her career, you know, I mean, a lot of people I interview on my podcast, you know, I interview people who talk about their career transitions, and that's where I drew a lot of the stories for the book. And you know, people will rattle off, well, I did this, I did that, I did that, I did that. And it sounds like, oh, well, I just hopped, skipped and jumped from one thing to the next, which is just not true.
Right,
you know, there were a lot of different things they had to do to get from point A to point B. The other thing I want to point out that I think is also important here, and is that, you know, as people are making various changes and making decisions, you know, they're not just necessarily just leaving everything behind that they did before, even if they weren't totally happy with it. You get to take with you anything that you want, the skills you've gained, the, you know, the whatever experiences you've had that are skill building, or just the knowledge that you have. You know, people think, oh, I'm making a change, I'm leaving all this other stuff behind. It's like, only if you're choosing to.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
You know, it's not like you're just throwing out, you know, everything you've done to go to the next thing. You get to take it with you. You may not use it in the same way. I mean, some people do. They, you know, do the whole transferable skill thing and they move maybe from one industry to the next. But in some, like, for example, one of the stories in the book, I tell a gentleman, 58 years old, had been a software engineer when it, and he ended up going into the field of affordable housing. Well, the job he got in affordable housing had nothing to do with software engineering or development, but it did tap into his project management skills that he had already developed for years prior. So, you know, his background in project management was vital to him getting that next job. And he had to do a bunch of networking because he had no experience in affordable housing. So yeah, that was a significant transition for him. And at 58, that was quite a coup, I'd say.
Yeah, that's very brave. And I will say I've done a lot of transitional resumes, and there's always something that we uncover that mm-hmm. will transfer no matter what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to find the right employer who's going to be open to, you know, giving someone a chance who maybe hasn't worked specifically in that industry, but is, you know, they can see that that person has a lot to offer.
Right. And then again, that's why the network matters, because you can't just send your resume out and have the computer bots checking off keywords, right? You really have to go in and, you know, talk about how you can, I don't want to say sell yourself. What I mean is just showing that value, talking about that value and proving that value.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
definitely.
You mentioned, Tammy, that the first chapter is fear, and then throughout, it's kind of a theme throughout, even mm-hmm. though the chapters are different. And that was a really good point, because one of the chapters, and I don't remember which chapter it was, but mm-hmm. you talked about how when people are considering a transition, they usually know what they want to move away from, but not necessarily where they want to do. And that creates a kind of a fear, right? How do you talk to them about that?
Yeah. So, that's actually, I think, true for a lot of people. You know, they know what they don't want, but they don't know what they do want. And so that's really where I think networking is vitally important. And I like to, you know, actually, I like to think of networking, and I do talk about this in the book. Networking is really research. It's information gathering. In fact, what's most important about networking is getting information. And too often, I think people think of networking as, you know, like shaking hands and kissing babies and, you know, being a politician or a used car salesperson or something. Mm-hmm. We give those used car salespeople a bad rap thinking of them that way. But, you know, as an insincere act of developing relationships, which it is not. It's a reciprocal process. You know, you can go into a networking conversation and you can have as much to offer the other person as they can offer you. And in fact, I recommend that people take a page out of Dale Carnegie's book and show up to a networking conversation and be interested, not interesting.
Exactly.
And really just ask lots of questions, get information, learn about the other person. What are they doing today? What were they doing before they were in the role they're in? How do they like the company they're in? What's the culture like? You know, what else can they learn about this other person's life at work? What they like about it? What do they find challenging? Because when they get that kind of information from another person, and it's almost like looking through in a reflecting pool in some ways too, because it gets them thinking about what they like and don't like. And it gives them just another perspective. It helps them to get out of their own heads mm-hmm. a little bit. And when they start to do that more, it does start to get them thinking about what they might like, not just what they don't like.
Right. And they're not forced to be the smartest person in the room.
No.
I think that's one of the greatest things about asking questions. Mm-hmm. If you're shy and you're a little nervous and you're worried about your knowledge, it's okay to ask questions.
Oh, in fact, I think it's vital
yep.
to, you know, really understanding what it is that you, it's vital to understanding what kinds of choices you might want to make going forward.
Right, right. Just from a personal perspective, when I was, so I'm the youngest of a really big family. Oh. And a lot of youngest kids are really extroverted and they're loud because they've had to, you know, keep up. I was the opposite. I was very shy. Ah. And I have a sister-in-law. So because my family's so big, I have a sister-in-law. She's about 12 years older than I am. And she came to visit and she would always ask me questions. She was always asking me questions. Of course, I was like, oh no, somebody's asking me a question. But when I realized what she was doing, and she's not shy at all, but then I realized if I'm asking the questions, you know, I'm learning too, but it's also a way, if you're an introvert, ask the questions. And if you don't want, you know, all eyes on yourself, it's a great way to experience the world. So
I love that. I love what you're saying about that, because, you know, introverts, you know, are great listeners, and they are, and then you got to figure, if they're great listeners, they must be great researchers too.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this thing about, you know, introverts not liking networking, I don't think that's true. I think they can be great networkers, especially in a one-on-one conversation, because it is a conversation of substance. What, you know, and we're talking in generalities here, of course, but you think about introverts, you know, not really appreciating small talk or large, you know, maybe not a large networking event, right? Well, honestly, I'm an extrovert, or kind of in the middle, maybe I'm an ambivert, but I don't love large networking events myself. And I'm not a big fan of small talk either. Mm-hmm. So, but I can understand where an introvert could be a fantastic networker, because they're going to get to the heart of the matter.
Right, right. I'm sure you've read the book Quiet.
I have read parts of it. I haven't read the whole thing, but I know it's an amazing resource for introverts.
It's such a great book. It's been a while since I read it, but I think that it's kind of breaking down that myth that the extroverts are the ones who are going to get things done, because the introverts, as you said, introverts are really good listeners.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I do an exercise when I do group work with, and I put up on the wall, I'll put up pictures of all these famous people, and they're all introverts. They're all famous introverts, but the people in the group don't know that. And so then I'll put up a piece of paper on the wall that says introverts and extroverts. And I have all these pictures, you know, they're like on stickies. And I'll say, okay, so tell me, who do you think the introverts and the extroverts are? And they'll all debate who they think is who, not realizing the entire group of pictures, they're all introverts. And it's so funny to hear what people's perceptions are of introverts and extroverts. And especially when you're talking about people who have fame, you know, and are entertainers or have done a lot of public speaking, it's just interesting to see what people's perceptions are, but it's a great way to start that conversation.
I love that. I just love it, because then you're, hey, that could be me up there. That could be my picture. So is your group all mostly introverts, or is it a mix of different types?
The pictures that I put up on the wall is all people who have been known to be introverts. They're all introverts.
Right. And then the people in your audience or in your class.
Oh, could be a mixture.
Anything, right?
I never know who's there.
The reason I ask is because if it's a mix of extroverts as well, they're also seeing the value of introverts. That introverts have something important to say, right?
Yeah. This is usually, you know, part of a communication training, it's usually part of a communication training that I'm doing for a company or a team. It's a great way to get people up off their chairs. You know, they're standing around the wall and they're trying to decide. And it's especially funny when I have a picture of Johnny Carson up there, and some people are like, who's that? And then I feel old. And that happened recently with a bunch of people. Who's that? And I went home and I immediately called my 28-year-old daughter and I said, tell me you know who Johnny Carson is.
And what'd she say?
She's like, "Well, he's a TV guy, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, okay. Whew, all right, I'm not that old."
I know who he is. So anyway, this was wonderful, Tammy. So valuable, and I'm looking forward to finishing your book because I'm halfway
Oh, thank
through.
you.
Yeah, it's
Thank you
really
so much.
wonderful. It's a great resource. And as we're closing, do you have any last words of advice for listeners?
I do. I do. I think one of the most important things that people can do if they're considering making any kind of a change or just wanting to improve something or wanting to be of service or help someone else out, whatever it is, but they're at a crossroads or they're saying, "I feel a little stuck," or "I'm not sure of something." Don't try to figure it out alone. Now, there's a lot of different options. You can talk to someone you trust, whether that's a colleague or a friend or some other trusted, person with knowledge that you respect. But there are other resources too. For example, if you're looking for some specific content kind of knowledge, yes, there's the internet, of course, but people always forget that their public library is an amazing resource, and that librarians, especially the reference librarians, they have a skill set that is amazing, and they have ways of finding information and sharing information that you cannot find using Google. And there's some ways, at least here in the Boston area, where I've used the Boston Public Library. Even though I don't live in the city proper, I can still call the Boston Public Library and I can request a search of information, like on behalf of a client, and say, "I want to know companies of this size and this industry that are within this footprint within downtown, and they will send me a report of
Wow.
all amazing amounts of information. So I just think that there's lots of things we just don't even realize are right at our fingertips. So when we're in that place of "I don't know," just realize there's lots of ways to get your questions answered. You don't have to do it alone.
What a great shout out to public libraries. I love that close.
Yes.
So, Tammy, in addition to coaching individuals, what other services do you provide, and what are next steps, and how can people contact you, and how can people get your book?
Well, that's a lot of questions. I can answer all of them though. So I do provide individual coaching. I will be having an online course that will be coming out in the next few months. And I also do occasionally have coaching groups when I have a good group of people who want to get together and do that. I don't have one at the moment, but I do have those. And I go into organizations and offer, webinars and workshops, things like that. I also do speaking, so I'm always looking for either conferences or associations to share, what I consider to be important messages about taking charge of your career and how to go about doing that and how to do it in a way where you're not threatening your stability and your security, but can still find something that's more fulfilling and satisfying and meaningful. I think it's very important to not spend the better part of your adult years being unhappy at work. People can find me through my website, tammygoulerloeb.com. You can spell that any way you want. I'm the only Tammy Guler Loeb out there, so I'm sure if you mangle it a little bit, it'll still find me. And my book is available everywhere. Amazon, Barnes and Noble, independent bookstores, they can order it. If they don't have it, they probably have to order it. And even in public libraries. So public libraries, you'd have to probably encourage some, it is in some public libraries, or they can also order it. So it's available as an ebook and in paperback, and eventually, hopefully sooner than later, it'll be available as an audiobook.
And by the way, I should add to your intro that you're an award-winning author.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I recently got a lovely gold award from the Nonfiction Authors Association. I was really honored to receive that.
That's amazing. And it's so well deserved.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for all you do. I think it's really a calling, Tammy. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad I get to listen to you when we're not chatting in person here. I'll be finishing your book, and I will be posting everything that you just said that will be in the show notes. So thanks again for coming.
Thank you so much. This was really delightful. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Career Cohort. I'm Emily Wong. You can find all my podcasts and blog posts at wordsofdistinction.net. And if you'd like to chat about how I can help you define the next step in your career and achieve your goals, head on over to the same website and book a time on my calendar for a free consult. In the meantime, please be sure to share, subscribe, rate, and review, so we can continue to bring you great content.